Well, next hour, we're going to talk about the Temple of Solomon and secret societies right here on Coast to Coast AM. And when we come back in just a moment with Charles Goyette, we will talk about you and we'll take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Charles Goyette will take your calls in a second. Charles, the last area that you were talking about bringing the prosperity back to us, the monetary system. Let's explain that.
Yes, George, you know, the dollar reserve standard is breaking down, and this has been confirmed for us by the price of gold, which is, after all, it's a referendum on the quantity and the quality of U.S. dollars, and for 10 years that referendum hasn't been particularly favorable. And because people are going to need to know, you know, how to negotiate this period and to protect themselves and their families and communicate to their family members and their loved ones what we're going through, I try to describe in the book Red and Blue, I try to describe the monetary system in a way that everybody can understand it, make it very easy. And I've done that with the story of the three little pigs. And it's just like the story of the three little pigs, except it's in reverse. And it has a moral. And once upon a time, this country, we lived in a monetary system that was made of brick. It was a gold-based monetary system, a gold standard. It was just like a house made of bricks, a house made of gold bricks. And it was solid, and we lived in it, and it did very, very well. And then in the early 1930s, the state came around and said, hey, we want those gold bricks. Give them to us or we'll lock you in jail. That's right, $10,000 fine, 10 years in prison if you didn't turn over your gold. And so the state came in and took all the gold it wanted for itself. And the American people that had been in this gold brick house were forced to move into another monetary system. And it was a monetary system called the dollar exchange standard. And it was just like a house of sticks. It was so flimsy that it couldn't last, and it didn't last. And the dollar exchange standard had persuaded foreign governments that they could hold their dollars and they'd be redeemable in gold, but they really weren't because we issued too many dollars. And that house crumbled, and the American people were forced to flee out of that house in 1971 into a house of straw. And it's called the dollar reserve standard, the current standard in which the dollar is redeemable in nothing. There is no discipline on the authorities of creating more, printing more, as many as they want. And now, after getting away with this for a while, the winds of economic reckoning are blowing, and the straw is getting blown to the four winds. And so the people are a little nostalgic for their good, solid brick house of gold. And we're going to have to vacate this monetary system because it's falling down around the world. It's breaking down around the world. And so the people are nostalgic for the solid gold brick house.
Sure.
But, you know, the politicians are the way they always were. And it wasn't so long ago that the president of the World Bank says, yeah, gold. We've got to somehow get gold in the monetary system. Maybe we'll index it or something. But this is an important lesson for people to remember. If they create another monetary system in which they create an index or a benchmark or something, it's not a real gold system. It's just another flimsy house. It's a house of paper. They may paint it to pretend it's gold, to paint it to look like it's bricks of gold, but it's a house of paper, and a house of paper that they're liable to come up with next is even flimsier than a house of sticks.
So if none of these four is taken care of,
yep,
what happens?
Okay, we go through a period in which the American people become very, very poor. The governing authorities become very, very serious about making people comply. And typically what you get is a very typical sort of a pattern that you go through is when the money starts to lose its value at an accelerating rate, the state gets very serious about using criminal laws to force people to use the money, not to hide the money, not to keep the money, not to use something else for money, and so on. And another thing they do then is they start passing laws. You know, the people complain. I mean, the more money they print, the higher prices go, like the price of gas and groceries. And the people start to complain, I can't make the family budget work. Somebody's got to do something. Well, the monetary authorities step up, or the congressional authorities, the government steps up and say, well, we'll do something. We'll ride to your rescue. Yeah. They already did do something. They ruined the value of the dollar. But now they come in and they institute price controls, and they pass laws to control prices, to force prices to one level. We've been through this. The world has been through this so many times. Price controls always and everywhere create shortages throughout the economy. And then the people say, oh, somebody's got to do something. I go to the grocery store. You know, I remember in the Nixon administration, there's a story about a lady that goes into the butcher shop, and she says, you're not allowed to charge that much for that cut of meat. The price controls say it's that much. And she says, and it's the low price across the street. And the butcher said, why don't you go across the street and buy it? And she said, because they don't have any.
Good point.
When I don't have any, mine's that price too. But they create shortage with their price controls, and then the people say, oh, the store shelves are empty. There are no goods and services available. Everything's falling apart. The authorities have to do something, and the authorities, who already did something with their price controls and already did something by debauching the money, they say, okay, we'll do something. And then, you know, they institute things like rationing and all of a sudden you get all kinds of worse cronyism and favoritism and criminality, and it's like sand in the gears of commerce, and everything grinds to a halt.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go to east of the Rockies, Bill in Webb City, Missouri, to get us going. Hi, Bill.
Hello, George. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, say, Charles.
Yes, sir.
Do you know how many factories we've lost since 1972?
It's more than I can count, but I'll bet you do count.
Yes, sir, but you go back 40 years to 1972 when Richard Nixon opened up the Chinese trade door. We've lost 55,000 factories.
55,000?
55,000. Oh, that's a 1,400 factories a year.
Yep.
Now, whether it's Obama or Romney or whoever gets to be president, Tom, Dick, or Harry, they're not going to change that around in 4 years or 8 years.
Well, they're not going to change it around because there's something larger going on. And the larger thing is that other places around the world have become hospitable to capital. When I was a kid, back at the time, nobody would have invested in plant and equipment in Vietnam or in China or in a dozen other countries. And now these countries are becoming more free. Capital is becoming more safe. The rule of law is taking shape there, and here in the United States, we're going the other way. The rule of law is being ignored. We are becoming less free. Capital is less safe in this country. There's no great mystery to any of it.
Can you imagine that? 55,000 factories in 40 years?
It's an amazing number, and I like the idea of a country making things too, but I like the idea of other people around the world becoming prosperous. The more everybody prospers, the richer the world is, the more opportunity, the more wealth, the richer all of our lives become. So I'm happy that these people have, you know, been able to throw the state off of their backs, at least to the degree that they have. And I only wish that the American people would somehow remember what it was like and do the same.
Oh, let's go to David in Chico, California now. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, Charles, I'm really feeling what you're saying tonight. I appreciate, especially you, George, I appreciate you having all these guests on your show. I think it's something that people need to hear. I'd just like to tell you my story. I'm a veteran of the war in Iraq. I served 4 years and 3 months. I got out of the military, and I used the GI Bill to go to college here at Chico State University. And, you know, I grew up with that idea that my father gave me. He came from Central America, immigrated here legally, and he told me, you know, if you work hard, if you get an education, you know, you can get a good career and you can do good for yourself, you know,
right.
and that's what I planned on doing, you know. I graduated from college in 2010. I had a 3.8 GPA. You know, I have a clean record and everything. And, you know, I've been looking for a job ever since I graduated, and I haven't been able to find a job, you know. I'm married, and I have a mortgage, and, you know, we're getting ready to lose our home.
That's scary.
And it's not like I don't want to work. You know, here in Chico, it's a small town, and I've put in applications at
every place I've been.
Every place. I've been turned down because I've been told that pretty much I'm overqualified, that they don't want to hire someone who has a college education. You know, and I'm trying to become a police officer, and that's a long process. But in the meantime, you know, I'm having to go other places to work. I was on the road working for 8 months with a company that had me all over the United States, and I had to quit that because my wife is disabled, and I had to be able to be close to take care of her. But lots of veterans are in the same boat that I am, and it seems like we're watching things go down the tubes, you know, watching our freedoms go away. And we can't seem to catch a break, and it's really disconcerting. And it's for me as someone who's a veteran and a patriot, I feel that the country has let us down, both sides, Democrats and Republicans. You know, and I'm a libertarian now. You know, I'm going to vote. You know, I'm pretty sure Ron Paul's not going to win, but I tell people I'm going to vote with my conscience. You know, because I feel that this country is headed in a really bad direction. And if it's forgetting its veterans and the people who, you know, fought for this country, what does that say about the rest of, you know, everybody else who's trying to make it? You know?
Well, David, we're not going to forget you. So first of all, thank you for serving. And Charles, I'm sure you concur with that. Who took away the great American dream, Charles? Who pulled it away?
You know, it was a slow, seductive process, and maybe it was when the American people. I mean, it's something. You know, it's fine to beat up politicians for it, and it's fine to beat up the media for it. But if you know, why beat up politicians? If you go to a convention of kleptocrats and you leave your wallet around and somebody steals it, you shouldn't be surprised. You know, so why blame them? I think ultimately we have to start to blame the American people to blame ourselves. And you know, slowly the American people thought, you know, that. Maybe these government demagogues are right. Maybe we can live at the expense of somebody else. Yeah, maybe we ought to let them take care of our retirement instead of taking care of it for ourselves. Oh, mandates? The word mandates rolls off their lips in Washington. You know, every day it's the mantra in Washington. You got mandates about birth control. You got mandates about health care. They want to mandate little kids have mental health screening. Mandate this, mandate that for a free people. There's an awful lot of mandates going around for a free, but the American people went on along with it. Yeah, we'll just let the government, these guys are real, we'll let them worry about our health care. We'll let them worry about our retirement. We won't save for ourselves because we know that they will save our money for us. And I'll tell you, it's a seductive trap. And instead of a few people in every neighborhood or a few people in every apartment building that haven't really prepared for the future, now we have generations of people that haven't prepared for their own future and their own retirement because they were seduced into the belief that somebody else would do it for them. And that, I think, is kind of how the American situation that we're in.
You know, it's probably possible, too, the reason why we have so many military bases all over the place outside of this country is because they're probably afraid they don't want a lot of troops here.
You know, I tell you, you bring me this something I wrote an article about a couple of days ago, and it got more comment, I think, than anything I've written about in a long time. Just the constant growth of these sort of subterranean, well, you've talked about them, these things that are going on in this country that are very concerning. Look, the Department of Homeland Security is buying 450 million rounds of 40 caliber. This is the heart. These are hollow points. This isn't for target practice. They're buying 40 caliber hollow points, 450 million rounds. They're buying an additional 175 million rounds of 223 caliber ammunition. Now, wait a minute. We don't have policing as a local function in this country. We are not supposed to have a national police force. What are these people doing? And then at the same time, the Supreme Court says, you know, it's okay if police departments want to strip search you for minor offenses. So you're riding along without an appropriate bell on your bicycle, and they pick you up, they can strip search you, they can force you to take a chemical delousing shower. I mean, there goes the Fourth Amendment. You've got local police forces now using cell phones as tracking tools. Some of them have been instructed, don't write it up in the police report that you did this, because they're worried about the legality. Mm-hmm. How about, the NSA is building this country's this spy center, this $2 billion eavesdropping spy center that we know. I mean, you know, one of NSA's crypto mathematicians says, look, we're this far from a turnkey totalitarian state. Where are we going in this country? The president of the United States can order the assassination of an American citizen on his own authority, on his own say-so? How does this happen?
Oh, and what about the arrest of Americans without trial?
Just grabbing them. You can't keep up with it. And John McCain the other day, he's wagging his finger at Obama because he wants to go to war in Syria. And, you know, you can't be a real man if you don't go to war. And he wants to bomb Syria and he wants to arm Syria and so on and so forth. I'm thinking, wait a minute. We're Americans. We're sovereign citizens. We have a constitution. If John McCain flippin' wants to go to war in Syria, he can introduce a declaration of war in the Congress like he's supposed to do. Then we can have a debate about it. Who is the enemy? It would be nice to know who the enemy is for a change. Who's the enemy? What's the goal? What does victory consist of? Where are the weapons of mass destruction? What is the rationale for the war? Instead of, you know, the executive branch can do all of this stuff on its own authority. Of course we're losing our liberty in this country. And if, And of course, this is the primary thesis of the book. When your liberty goes, your prosperity goes. So for people who don't really care that much about liberty, everybody cares about prosperity. All right. You want to restore American prosperity, live in an opportunity society in which your kids have the promise of a better life, you have secure retirement, home ownership, all of those things. If you'd like to restore that state of America, a brighter future, you need to restore American liberty.
See, most Americans, outside of people who are listening to our program and programs like this, don't believe our liberties are being chopped away.
Yeah. No, you're right. And, you know, it's you struggle to get their attention, and maybe sometimes you do with little things, but some of them are irritants, and some people think, well, so what if you don't have, you know, the government's going to tell you what light bulbs you can have or what your toilet does, what kind of washing machine. They don't.
Or you have to fill out the census and tell us everything about you.
Yeah. And then it starts to get a little more personal when they tell you what your grandmother can take or not take to relieve her pain. Wait a minute. Who died and made somebody in Washington her doctor? You know, it goes on from there. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Wait a minute. The Federal Reserve, without any approval, any oversight, and they try to do it in secret, the Federal Reserve creates $16 trillion in loans to foreign banks and foreign central banks and foreign private companies and so on without anybody knowing. All of this stuff is done at the risk of the purchasing power of the United States dollar, and they get away with all of this stuff. How about the TSA? I mean, we all know the indignity of flying these days, and then they're going to take it to the streets. Operation Viper, they want the TSA on the streets of America. I lived for a short while in one of those countries. I was a very young man. We used to call the police that were on the corners in the train stations with submachine guns and stuff, we used to call them the iguana. And it's kind of an ugly term, but that's what they were like. And they had, you know, free rein to shove people around, and you always felt a little bit threatened, and they were watching you at every corner. And yet we're moving in. We used to laugh about it, George, when I was young.
Now you're crying about it.
Now I'm crying about it because it's starting to happen here.
Next up, let's take a quick call before the break. Dave in Chicago. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, first time.
Great. Glad you got through.
All right. This is a very interesting conversation. I want to ask the gentleman if he's ever heard of geolibertarianism.
Tell me about it.
It's very interesting. I would call it like progressive libertarianism. You want minimal government, but you also want to ensure that people have equal opportunity so that they can participate, you know, in the free market. And the way I understand it, since the earth and natural resources, those are the basis of all opportunity, right? Since you can't really do much without...
Not really. And if George will give me a chance after the break, I'd like to respond to that. That is not really the source of our prosperity. And this is an important point, and I would like to make it in terms, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So.
Well, we'll come back to you, David, in just a moment. We're going to hit this break, and you too, Charles. And we'll also take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. So those of you on hold in Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Texas, Clearwater, Florida, truck driving in Indiana, Seattle, and the rest of the country, and North America, stay with us. We also go worldwide, streaming on the Internet. We've got Skype for you at George97313. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, indeed. Hey, look, we're looking for you to participate in an auction with the California Earthquake Authority, KFI AM, that's 640, that's our affiliate in Los Angeles, and the American Red Cross. They want you to send a message to Get Prepared California. Now, to raise the funds, they are auctioning off a dinner with a lot of people, including me. So all you have to do is go to www.kfiam640.com. In the search section, I'm going to do that now because I want to find out what the bid is on me. Go to Red Cross, and once that comes up, you go to auction, and I'll be down at the bottom there, and you can bid. The bid ends the night of April 27th, so we don't have much time there. And the current bid for me, 9 people have bid, 2 tickets for dinner, $2,350. So go ahead and bid as much as you want over that, and I'll see you on June 14th. Charles, let's go back to David in Chicago with his geo-libertarianism. Go ahead, David.
Yeah. I just wanted to explain that. I was saying you can't really do much without having a piece of earth to live on and work on. You need materials from the earth. So the idea is that you can monetize the value of all natural resources, and you can distribute that to everybody, just like you distribute a dividend to shareholders.
Well, I don't want to be involved in any of these distribution programs. Listen, I make this point. I think this is very important. I'd like to spend a minute on it. This is a very important point. And I make it in the book, the difference between wealth and prosperity. So that people are going to need to know this during this period so that we can steer ourselves back to a port, to a haven of prosperity again, and not get sold a bill of goods. There is a difference between wealth and prosperity. You had, you know, the ancient Romans, they improved property rights. They had trading outposts as far away as the east coast of India.
They were everywhere. Right.
Everywhere. Civil engineering that they built, aqueducts and roads. They had populations that the ancient world couldn't believe could be sustained. And then the later plunderers came along. Attila the Hun got a metric ton of gold a year. They emptied out the treasury of Rome. So they got the wealth, the temporary wealth, but they did not get long-term prosperity. You see this with the oil sheikhs, you know, the Saudis and Gaddafi. They got gold-plated bathroom fixtures, but they didn't get long-term prosperity for their people. And when the oil runs out, then they return to a state of want. Prosperity is what we want. It's the dynamic of wealth creation, and it is not dependent on resources. Let me give you one example. It's a very good one, because Hong Kong and Russia are a perfect contrast. Hong Kong is a rocky land, steep slopes, volcanic material, no size at all, 10,000 kilometers maybe, no natural resources to speak of, no oil, no gas. Now, Russia is the largest country on the face of the earth. They are the largest exporter of natural gas, second largest exporter of oil. Hong Kong, though, has one of the lowest infant mortality rates in the world. Russia has the highest in the developed world. Hong Kong has 1/20th of Russia's population. But for all of that, Hong Kong manages to export more than all of Russia, and it has a per capita income 3 times higher of Russia and a life expectancy that's 14 years longer. There's a difference between wealth and prosperity, and it's something that people need to understand, because they will get sold a bill of goods about somebody, some board, some bureaucrat that wants to come in and divide up things, and, you know, and like the International Monetary Fund has done all around the world, spread, you know, poverty everywhere they've gone with their redistribution programs and stuff. Stay away from that stuff. Just free up the dynamic of people to go out and create new prosperity for themselves and their families and one another, and the whole human race prospers as a result.
Next up, we go to Terrence, truck driving in Indiana, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Terrence. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Sure thing.
Well, I know a pound of potatoes has a value to it. But I'm wondering, factually, what is a derivative, and is it really lawful to measure this value in dollars? Exactly what is it?
Well, sure, a derivative is something that's value is derived from the value of something else. So if I say, listen, you're a gold miner, I'm going to buy your production in the future at a price, and you say to me, look, I want to be able to meet payroll, hire people, and know that next year I can meet payroll, buy equipment. I want to sell you my production now at a price. And I say, okay, I'll buy your production for the year, say 2014, at this price. We enter a contract. That's a derivative.
And you get the money now, right?
You get the money now. You know what the price is. That, you know, I know what I'm paying. I may be wrong. I may be right. Maybe if I had waited, I could have bought it cheaper. But you get the contract that you need. Maybe prices would have gone higher, but you needed to know today that you could buy the equipment, pay it off, hire the people, and so on. So all of these things are derivatives, and all of those things are fair if used in a normal, prudent manner. Now, the difference comes in when the government starts interfering in this stuff. Look, all of a sudden, there wasn't like LSD in the water supply that all of these banking institutions, you know, investment bankers that have been around since the end of the Civil War, all started doing the same wrong thing at the same time, and they all blew up. There was some larger condition going on, but these companies have been around forever, all started responding to it. And you know what it is? It's
greed.
It's phony lighthouses. The old days, pirates would build phony lighthouses, and they'd lure ships to rocky shores where they'd break up, and then they'd plunder them and stuff with phony signals. But all the ships thought, oh, that's the real lighthouse, and they sailed there, and they wrecked on the reefs. We get false signals about conditions when the government bails people out, when it artificially creates interest rate conditions that lead people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do, and all of a sudden you get companies been around forever. All of a sudden, you know, you get this cluster of errors, everybody doing the same wrong thing. You've got to look beyond at the larger things that are inducing them to do it, and it's generally a condition like the Federal Reserve.
Good point. First-time caller, let's go to Robert first, Oklahoma City. Go ahead, Robert.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Well, I have a couple of comments and then a question. I think we need to get back to where the government is our servant again, and the people realize that, and we start impeaching some of these people. And I also think that we just got to get back to that, where we realize that we have the freedom to control our government and turn it back around. And also, I think we just need to put freedom back out there. And what do you think about having the GSA people pay back out of their own pockets the tax money that they wasted?
I don't think that'll happen. What do you think, Charles?
I'm with you, George. I don't think that'll happen. You know, but that's a great, vivid example. You know, it offends everybody, but this stuff goes on such a much, much larger scale. Everybody can, you know, identify with the, you know, their dollars being spent on hot tub parties and, you know, clowns and stuff, and everybody's having a swinging good time. But, you know, that's really the small potatoes. It's offensive to me, too, but it's small potatoes. You know, the stuff that's really plundering the wealth of the American people is this massive stimulus programs and bailouts and, you know, wealth transfer, subsidies to these private companies, and where, you know, we're prohibited from buying something that's better at a cheaper price so that, you know, people with great political connections can make donations to politicians who will protect their sweetheart deals and stuff. And it goes on in this country on such a massive scale that, you know, it's fine to get our attention focused on the GSA guys, but I'll tell you, we got a lot more house cleaning to do than those kind of highly visible good for TV shows.
I think so too. Let's go next to Clearwater, Florida. Chris, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Chris.
At this level of technology, we all ought to be able to live like kings and queens, all of us are able-bodied.
We should.
And the contrary to popular belief, usury is not loan sharking, but it's interest charged for loans. And we have the issue that by the issuer of currency and credit, which is the Fed, and it's done through the Fed member banks, Citibank, J.P. Morgan, Wachovia, and a couple others. And because the Fed issues the principal in the form of currency and credit, and they lend at interest, but they never issue the interest into circulation, they'll eventually end up with all the collateralized property because it's like a game of musical chairs. So, I would disagree with Ron Paul about going back to a gold-based currency because, first, we would need to have the government confiscate and seize the wealth of the private Fed shareholders, and their ill-gotten gains must be seized as a priority to going back to any kind of what the Von Mises Institute and Ron Paul recommend. And the Chicago Fed internal document, Modern Money Mechanics, says that they don't loan anything. They just issue the credit into the money supply when you sign the note.
I'll just say this to you, that I think you misunderstand Ron Paul's position. The world for thousands of years, for 5,000 years, has preferred things like gold to paper money. Paper money's always failed. But Ron Paul's position is a little bit different, and it's exactly the same as mine, that what you need to do in this country is remove the legal tender laws. The legal tender laws that force people to use a specific currency, the legal tender laws, that courts, if you and I contract to do something in terms of gold, the legal tender laws say to the courts that the courts say they won't enforce our contracts even though we're consenting adults, because legal tender laws force us to use this or that. Let me put it to you this way. When the currency is sound, when the currency is of self-evident, sustainable, long-term value, you don't have to pass a law.
When's the last time it was that way?
It's been a very long time in this country. But people want good, stable currencies. You only need legal tender laws, George, when you want to force people to use a currency they don't want.
That's
because
true.
It's not reliable.
Yeah.
So
let's go.
But Ron Paul's position is repeal the legal tender laws and let people choose, so that at least if the dollar goes where we think it will go, at least there are alternative systems of currency that, so that commerce doesn't stop and leave us all impoverished. But let alternative currencies compete against one another. And he suspects, or I suspect that he believes, because I certainly believe, that if people have a choice, they will choose gold and silver. But if somebody, if Paul Krugman or Ben Bernanke wants to use, you know, paper money, if they want to use the special drawing right of the International Monetary Fund, some fiat made-up worthless piece of paper, they're welcome to do it. I don't think anybody will want to exchange with them or trade with them on that basis. But nobody's forced to do anything they don't want to do if you get rid of those laws.
Would anybody have Ron Paul serve as their Treasury Secretary?
Certainly not Mitt Romney, who doesn't seem to get this stuff. You know, he doesn't really understand the monetary issue. He's been a supporter of the Federal Reserve. Actually, he's been a supporter of Ben Bernanke until I noticed just today he said, oh, you know, I've got to get rid of Ben Bernanke. Well, that's a wet finger in the wind for you, because, you know, he's never understood any of this stuff, never addressed it. And so, you know, he's either got some internal polling numbers that people are beginning to wake up and understand what the Fed has done, or, you know, he senses that this is a kind of a populist issue. But certainly he's not going to appoint Ron Paul or anybody who shares his views, because, you know, this is, you put a stop to the cronyism with sound money and the government.
Yeah.
Had $1 trillion from the government budget. All of a sudden the cronies go begging and the American people get wealthy again.
Let's go to David in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Charles. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was a carpenter for 25 years, and I watched my livelihood pretty much disappear to the hands of lower paid labor. And I'm wondering if, Charles, you have a take on why the federal government is continuing to support and has for a long time illegal immigration, and given the fact that our labor market has diminished so badly, why they're behind this.
Well, there are more reasons. It's not an area of my expertise, but there are more reasons than you could shake a stick at. I mean, there were people, the Ted Kennedys of the world that thought that it might be a good way to swell the ranks of Democratic voters. There were people that, you know, that thought that, you know, for on behalf of large businesses, that it might be a way to get a lot of, labor for their businesses, big, you know, corporate entities. There are a lot of different constituencies that came together to open the immigration floodgates in this country. And I understand exactly how you feel. I see this all the time at people in the trades and so on that have had their earnings truncated like you have. It's gone on everywhere. The solution to all of this is productivity. There's only one thing that creates wealth. It's not laws, it's not minimum wage laws. The only thing that creates wealth is productivity. Productivity is the soul of wealth. And it's not division of wealth that creates prosperity, it's productivity. And until we understand that all wealth comes from productivity, then we're going to be a second-rate nation. We're going to continue to fade into the background, and it's a very unhappy prospect, I think.
Let's get San Antonio, Texas. Robert's with us. Go ahead, Robert.
Hard-hitting, great analysis, Charles, and another great show, George. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Ron.
Quick comment. I think we need to use the word surplus a little more. In human history, that has been the defining factor of our success as a species. But a quick side note, we are going to be occupying Bilderberg Group this year.
Good.
We have a Facebook page, Occupy Bilderberg 2012. Like it, please. We're sending two groups of activists up there. It's supposedly going to be in Virginia, but if it's not there, we're going to go wherever it is.
Wherever it may go. They'll probably move it.
Thanks a lot, George.
Okay. You probably move it indeed. As a matter of fact, next hour, we talk about secret societies on Coast to Coast. It kind of flows, Charles. right into what you've been talking about.
I'd say it does.
Let us go next to Don in Shreveport, Louisiana. I think we've got a moment here for you, Donald. Go ahead.
Yes, great program. Two thoughts I wanted to bring up. One is, I believe, with our politicians staying in office as long as they do, contributing to this problem, and I don't see term limits ever getting approved. I wonder if you might, what your thoughts are, and if you might spread this idea of having a tax day, April 15th, and election day within 1 week of each other, I think would, in a way, establish the term limits. What you thought of that idea?
I understand all of these things. I call them all term limits and the tax day issue, all of these things, you know, balanced budget amendments. These are all what I call mechanical solutions. And unfortunately, you know, no mechanical solution is going to do for free people what they really need to do for themselves. You cannot institute something that will watch your liberties for you and make you prosperous by the institution of a mechanism. If there is not an awakening, I know this is very disconcerting for a lot of people that listen to me, George. Everybody wants, you know, is there a program, a charismatic candidate, a reform, a measure, a bill, or something, you know, one thing that we can do and it'll make everything all right? And the answer is no. The answer is no. You have to begin to understand freedom. You have to be able to explain it to the next generation. You have to start talking. When this country was founded, the American people were aflame in their love for liberty. They talked about it in their town squares, in the taverns, in the churches. In fact, they were bitter political enemies, but when in their old age, they became great correspondents, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. John Adams wrote Thomas Jefferson, and he said, the American Revolution wasn't 1776. The American Revolution was long before a shot was fired at Lexington. The American Revolution occurred beginning in 1760, for 15 years beginning in 1760. And what was it? It was the desire of the American people, the understanding, the appreciation, the movement to become free people, and everything else happened as a consequence. If we think that we can have, you know, some top-down solution, something instituted, a new program, a new reform or something that will fix our problem, we're missing the mark, in my view.
The name of the book, by Charles Goyette, Red and Blue and Broke All Over. Great interview, Charles. Thanks. Up next, let's talk about the Temple of Solomon and some secret societies.